everyone, and welcome back to Once Upon a Timing, your podcast all about shell phones, person sticks, I mean, it's like hot dog on stick, but it's a person, and the latest addition to the Portal World Crossing phenomenon, Kraken Blood. Abby, I have pulled up a list from Once Upon a Time Wiki of all the ways you can portal. There's a lot. There are one, two, three, four, five, six. There's like two dozen.
Like earlier in the seasons, it was just like, there's no way. We can't possibly go home. And now it's, don't worry, there's all these other options. Oh, dang it. Like, I wish they would have just stuck with one. I wish it would have just been magic beans. We could have incorporated some other stuff. But I swear to you, a donkey laugh came out of me when it was, we can't go back. Why not? This thing only runs on, pulls out an empty thing, Kraken Blood. And I was like, oh no! Another thing!
Oh no, it's the latest. And then you have a mermaid right there later on in the episode. And one of the things is literally mermaid magic. They can swim between realms. And at no point did Ariel be like, hey, hop on my back. I'll swim you to Storybrooke.
Yeah, because it doesn't Ariel's thing where she can like swim below mm-hmm. curses. Like curses yep. only go so deep. I have so many questions about Ariel's presence in Agrabah and how that would be so unsafe for her as a fish person.
Well, everybody, I'm Beth Elderkin, and I'm joined as always by the lovely Abby. Abby? How are you doing?
Not for nothing, but I saw Travis Kelce, and I was in the same room with him and breathed the same air with him. So I am a whole different person right now than I was the last time that we talked.
Wow.
He was nowhere near me, and it was definitely very good that my phone zooms in like a creeper. Because I was able to, like, I was at a basketball game. And it was like, zoom, 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 zoom. I was like, I can see him. It's like we're together. Yay. Like, I did it. We're breathing the same air. That happened. So I'm excited.
That sounds fun. Nice.
Yeah, it's great. It's very exciting. But other than that, you know, I love a good episode of Once Upon a Time with a random pop-up bar situation. Krakens.
Technically two pop-up bars, because we also got the pop-up tiki situation going on the island.
That's true.
A lot of stuff, guys. We're talking about season 6, episode 15, A Wondrous Place, aka Side Quest Land, because Hook has been separated from the woman that he loves. He is determined to get back to her. Gideon has got his shenanigans going on and apparently can control everything using the power of a woman's tears, which we don't really know anything about it yet, so we're not really going to talk about it yet, but I just want to put in everybody's minds that that's really stupid.
I would just like to say, ahead of their time in a commentating about weaponizing white women tears.
Oh, this show is so ahead of its time.
Commentary. Which, listen, and we'll talk about it, but, like, you know, what a way to make Emma not trust being vulnerable ever again. That she can be controlled by a Kleenex with her mascara streaks in it.
That would, like, I would never cry again.
I couldn't make me.
I would steal myself.
No, I would be, it would just be like, no, I'd be suddenly in danger every time Steel Magnolias came on. Like, I couldn't be stopped. Like, it would just be like, nope, Abby can't control herself. Everybody has her tears. She's cried everywhere. She saw a commercial about a dog being adopted. Cried.
So, this episode is, takes place largely in the, It's all about Agrabah. Aladdin and Jasmine are back. You've got the Enchanted Forest. A little bit of time in Storybrooke. We're going all over the place. And this episode is also really fascinating because of all the weird behind the scenes, like little detail shenanigans that are associated with it. I was reading the wiki, and there's just some funky stuff with this episode. I'm just going to relay a couple of them to you. First is apparently it was so cold they needed to put a heater in Aladdin's pants.
Oh my goodness.
And Colin O'Donoghue in an interview said that he also wanted that because he was really cold, but his pants were too tight. So he did not get a heater in his pants.
Damn these tight pants. I can't fit a heater inside of them. Listen, guys, skinny jeans will be the death of us all. We can't fit tiny heaters in them.
And then the other one that was really, this was just such a fun little weird detail. So in Agrabah, they have that set with the sand and everything.
Yeah.
Two things about that set. One, apparently they wanted camels, but it would have cost so much money because there are no camels in Canada. So they had to import them. So that's why there were llamas, because they couldn't afford camels.
That's the most Canadian thing I've ever heard in my life.
And then the other one was, so apparently they had set up this shot right before Christmas break. And the sand got all wet because Vancouver was raining and it was really wet. So basically what they did was over the course of Christmas break, they had a fan going, like blowing on the sand because they dumped a bunch of sand in, like hundreds of pounds. They just had a fan going 24/7 during the whole break to dry the sand before they were filming. So this was just like wet sand for weeks.
So here's my question. Do we think we were actually going to get the end of the Agrabah thing? Or do you think at some point they were setting up a third big ass fan and just went, hey, by the way, we're rewriting the ending of this. We're done with Agrabah. We're never doing this again. This is awful.
They're like, you made us bring in sand. It was a pain in the ass. We're rewriting this. It's in a ring and we're fine now. Agrabah's gone forever. I can show you the world.
Aladdin has a full Anakin Skywalker moment. He's like, I hate sand. It's gritty. It gets everywhere. It's gross. Awful.
Oh, on another note, so Dune 2 just came out, recently came out. I've seen it. Highly recommend it. Someone made a little synopsis of what if Anakin liked sand? And that's like the perfect synopsis of Dune 2. That's all you need to know is what if Anakin Skywalker actually liked sand?
Okay, interesting. Yeah. I have been hesitant to see Dune 2, mostly because I am critically lukewarm on Timothy Chalamet. Like, I just can't. I don't know. We went and saw Wonka. I have a child. We were like, let's go see Wonka. I couldn't get past it. He's just him. I don't see him as a character ever. I can't see past the giant angular cheekbones. I don't know why.
Well, I will say he's actually very good in the role. Okay. And if you don't like him or you have less than amicable feelings toward him, you'll love the movie because he's not a good person.
Fantastic. Did you get the popcorn bucket, Beth?
No, I did not get the popcorn bucket. It's $25. I'm not going to spend $25 on a popcorn bucket.
You're not going to meme it out for $25?
No, I don't use Twitter anymore for my personal life. Okay, everybody.
Good.
We're going to start in Storybrooke, where we have a woman on the widow on the widow's walk. Her husband has long gone out to sea. The sailor said, Brandy, you're a fine girl. But my life, my love, and my lady is the Nautilus and a portal into another land. Emma is trying to distract herself because she is feeling very despondent and sad about Hook ditching her and leaving her, because that's the impression that she has. And she also makes time to let her dad know, oh yeah, Hook killed your father, just BT dubs.
We don't get to hear her break this news. We just get to see him spiral, being like, oh, I don't really know how to process this. Which, I don't know. I get it, because they needed to show him not, like, losing his mind and swearing vengeance to end Hook's days. Mm-hmm. But also, I'm sorry, I've been with Charming since day one. This isn't how he reacts to any kind of bad news, let alone that kind of bad news.
No. But it isn't long until Regina shows up and goes, oh, David, you just found out some horrible news about yourself and your life and your family. I need you to go to bed because we need a girls' night out. Emma, no, we're not going to reconfigure the entire paper history of all the arrest records. We're not digitizing everything, girl. I've got a coupon. We're going to use the coupon.
We have a coupon. You are not going to sit here and be sad at a printer. Because that's all you're going to be doing. You'll be scanning files and then side-clicking on PDF names to rename them so they're easier to find and putting them in folders. This is not how we weep. No. We're going to, I, the mayor, am going to get you to go to a bar that has just opened up that I had no idea about. It has simply opened its doors and I knew nothing about this. I'm just excited because I found this flyer. No zoning things came past my desk. I have not done any sort of paperwork in quite some time. So I love the idea that the mayor is being shocked by new business.
Yeah.
Fully functional to the point of coupons business.
I mean, at this point, she's kind of just a mayor in name only. She kind of always was, because it was just her magic that was holding everything together.
I know, but I feel like they still, like, she's still, like, while they kind of operate as an autonomous collective, they still need cops. They still have their sheriffs. They still need someone to blame. I just think it's really funny that, as a mayor, the one thing she would definitely know about is a new bar in town. But anyway, that's not the point. I do love that we bully Charming into going back to sleep to wake Snow up. And Snow is... Snow goes full, like, college girl mode. And I love this for her.
You know, we love a woman who's breastfeeding, who's probably not drinking very much, who's asleep half the time, who gets sloshed after one vodka soda. And picks fights with Vikings and beats them. I love it. I love this for her. This is my favorite I've seen Snow in so long.
I love everything about her. She's like, it's artisanal, which I think just means it's stronger. It's clearly a Jack and Coke and a really tall cup.
Yes.
And she's like, ooh, I like this. It's fancy. Different. And the bartender's like, you're welcome. I used cherry Coke. It's artisanal. I love the Vikings. They look like grown men going to a theme party that they forgot about until the day before. And they're not even playing darts. They're playing knives. Mm-hmm. Like they're throwing giant knives. Amazing. Again, if this was a real bar, spoilers, I feel like the owner of the establishment would have been like, hey man, we serve artisanal drinks. There can't be Viking knife games happening here.
It's called Aesop's Tables, which apparently was, I think, the director's idea to call it that. And I think it's a super fun name. I see this whole scene with the bar, with the Vikings, Aesop, the names of the drinks, all this stuff. This is the kind of stuff I like in Once Upon a Time. Like, as stupid as this episode was, I actually really enjoyed it because it had these fun, bigger than itself elements that we just lose so much now because we get into that maudlin nitty gritty.
Yeah.
I just like girls' night out, ladies who tavern at a random bar with a bunch of pun names, and Snow gets drunk and does knife fights with Vikings and wears their helmets and plays pool. And also, Regina's hair looks amazing.
They everyone looks so fantastic. I will say my only criticism, because the more that I'm thinking about it, Aesop's Tables sounds like, it does sound like a billiard hall. Like, it would have to almost be all pool. But it also just kind of sounds like it would have some sort of, it'd be some sort of like really up its own ass kind of restaurant that has some really pointed views. Like, it would be bordering on that movie, The Menu. Like, something weird is happening in this,
yeah,
at Aesop's Tables. You're being taught a lesson that you don't quite know about and you don't learn till the bill gets there kind of situation. But again, yes, I love this. This Aesop's Tables and Girls Night and Ladies Night, or whatever the coupon was, would get me there so fast. Mm-hmm. I'd have been there at opening. I'd have been ready to go. I'd have probably had some sort of theme shirt that I made myself. I'd have been just like, this is my new favorite bar. This is my new personality.
The whole time, Regina is trying to get Emma to open up about her feelings. She wants the tears to come out. She wants the bonding experience. She's there for her friend, for the co-mother of her child. And It is a little bit strange seeing Regina in this way. It's just like the wing woman. But I also really liked it because there's just this full circle element to it where the two of them are just there for each other now. And I enjoy that while Snow is getting super drunk with Vikings. Like, and then she goes and she can't really talk to Regina. She doesn't know how to express herself. It isn't until she has a candid conversation with Aesop, who I loved this actor. I loved his portrayal. I thought he was great. He established himself so quickly. So that broke my heart because of what we find out later. I forgot about the reveal and it made me mad. And I think it made me mad the first time.
I feel like I think it made us both mad because it was just like, no, you give us a good character and then you immediately get rid of it. Damn it. How did you do this? How?
Yeah, you get rid of him for freaking Gideon, and the only benefit we get is there's one scene where Gideon isn't in that stupid cloak. Like, small victories, I guess.
I love the idea that, like, because Jane Espenson worked on this episode. I love the idea of her coming into this episode being like, listen, I'm going to do a lot of things. First off, get rid of that cloak. I never want to see that cloak again. Take that cloak out back and shoot it with a gun. I don't want to see that. Get it out of here. I don't want to see it.
Well, as Emma is having a heart-to-heart with Aesop, the bartender, the mixologist, she gets a little teary, she gets a little emotional, and she dabs her eyes with the napkin, very pointedly puts it on the bar top, and you're like, there's a purpose for that, and there is, and we'll find out what it is in just a moment. But first, why don't we figure out what she's crying over? She's crying over Hook, the man who left her, who went on the Nautilus to ne'er come back. But it's a little more complicated than that, isn't it, Abby?
Girl, you shed tears over a man. Ugh. Ugh.
Gross.
But also at a bartender. I love that it's with the bartender. Because I love, like, there's such a great idea of a trope of just being like, these two powerful women in your life, I refuse. No, I will not expose myself to. But a bartender is simply built different. Something about that 2 feet of bar between you and that person, you will tell that person your social security number. You will tell them anything. You just start telling them about your childhood and they will stand there and listen. It's great. Bartenders hear terrible, awful things. So this makes sense. But yes, she is crying because, well, Grumpy, the messy bitch that he is, witnessed Hook board the Nautilus, and then he witnessed the Nautilus go down periscope. He apparently did not then witness Gideon reappearing at the docks, laughing maniacally and stating his plan out loud. He missed that part. He went running straight to Emma.
I mean, it's the moment, it's the curse. Anything like that happen, he goes running instantly. He doesn't have time to wait for the follow through because the curse is coming.
Yeah. I saw it, and that's I'm going to tell you what I immediately saw. I can't answer any follow-up questions. I've told you every fact I know. So we go to the Nautilus. And they're like, "Oh no. We've transported realms because somehow this has happened and I can't reverse it. What are we going to do? I have to get back. I have to get back to my woman. I have to tell her that I was wrong and I'm not scared." And the amount of melodrama pouring off of Hook could have fueled the Nautilus. Like, we could have just grabbed it and physically held it. Because he's like, "No, I must. I'm not meant to die in the water." "You're a pirate, Hook." "Yes, you are. Like, you're meant to die at sea. I don't know what you're talking about."
I don't know. Like, I felt like Colin O'Donoghue was having fun in this episode.
No, I agree.
Hamming it up.
Oh, no. It was very good and pointed melodrama because he was the way that it was just so funny. Because when he hams it up like that, it makes me smile.
Yeah.
Because everybody else, like, Captain Nemo is just stone face saying the words Kraken blood. He just says it without blinking. He pulls a empty something or other out and be like, "The only way we can get back." The Nautilus is obviously being fueled from portal to portal by Kraken blood. You know, Kraken blood, that thing we all know that helps you cross over portals.
Yes. Yeah? Before we move on, continue, can we just take a moment to truly appreciate the scene, the shaky cam scene when they were getting sucked into the portal? This felt like full on OG Star Trek. Oh yeah. No, Shea, we're
shaking the
off.
Camera and they're all just like grabbing on. So
like, I recently got a new TV that has higher resolution, and so a lot of the older shows I can see a little bit more clear, and I turn off the motion smoothing and stuff. So that scene just looked so awkward. And I was just watching, I'm like, oh no, this is so uncomfortable. I just imagined the actors in the moment just being like, okay, move this way. Now move this way.
There's some guy with like a thing on a stick just be like, just follow this. And then we're over here. And they're like, oh. Yeah, so we get sucked into a portal. Oh no, so tragic. We now have to go find a Kraken. Cut to the Enchanted Forest.
Mm-hmm.
Where tragically, Jasmine and Aladdin have landed. They don't know why they're there. She very clearly wished for to go back to find Agrabah. She can't find it. And Jasmine in this whole episode is a completely different person. Like a different. She's like, duh. I knew this wasn't work. I can't believe I asked for this. This is terrible. I can't find it. Maybe I was never meant to find it. I'm a princess and I'm bad at it. And Aladdin's like, no, girl, it's fine. Also, like, you know, like, hey, like, why aren't we kissing more? Like,
I'm not sure if they told you, but my pants are very warm.
They're very, hey, ooh, is that a heater in your pants? Or, hey. And he, I mean, as the kids say, absolutely risen it up. The Riz King. Because every time he touched her face, my brain short-circuited for her. Like, if anybody touched my face like that, I would have just passed away. Like, it would have just been like, my body can't handle this. It was so smooth. And he was like, hey, why are we kissing? Like, we should kiss. And she's like, no, I have to find Agrabah. You don't know me. I'm a monster. And then they get in a boat and they're going to go on the boat.
Well, first she finds the ring in her pocket.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She's got one ring in her pocket and it represents a lifetime of failure.
And she's like, I near my ring. And I love how casually they are about it, just her random ring. Because she's like, oh, it must have fallen out of my pocket. And Aladdin like picks it up and I'm like, it's a real weird way to propose, but okay. she's like, oh no, this is it. This represents my failure. Okay. No context
for that.
There's
a whole thing in the episode about magic coming with a price, including the wishes. Yeah. And they keep talking about what that price is.
Uh-huh.
But then in the end, it's not a price.
No.
So, like, what was the price? Just going to the random enchanted forest so we can meet up with Hook later? Like, I don't know what the price was.
I don't know why they needed to end up in the enchanted forest for this.
Same. Why didn't they just portal to where they were with a ring in her pocket?
Okay, so here's my follow-up question. What was the price or the weirdness about the wish realm? Because that just happened. Mm-hmm. And there was no awkwardness. But you're right. It's not, magic doesn't come with a price where it's just like, it's confusing and you don't understand it. It's like, take me to Agrabah. Okay, so I'm going to take you to a different location and give you a ring. And it was just like, okay. So now we have the ring. And now we have to flash back to get a little bit more context about that. And I'll go to the part where I'll skip ahead just a bit, because basically in the Enchanted Forest, before they do the little flashbacks and stuff, they end up in a boat. And then a Kraken comes to take them. And then they kill the Kraken. And then Hook appears with the Nautilus and is super mad that they killed the Kraken and yells at them. Like, they don't know that any of this is happening. They just know that they were being attacked by a sea creature.
Yeah.
So they defended themselves. And then Hook's like, I can't believe it. Why would you do this to me? Don't you like me? Why would you do this specifically to me? Me, Hook, the person you like. How absolutely dare you? I just, again, it was just the melodrama was big and cheesy, and I loved it. And Jasmine's like, I'm so sorry. I mess everything up. So, flashback.
We got our first flashback. There's a little fun, little set note from the wiki that I thought you'd find very funny. Ooh, I've got a lightning storm going on outside.
Ooh.
Or is it lightning, or is it from, it might be my husband's TV. So you'll find this very, 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 very funny. They made a note in here of that the boat scene was filmed inside in a studio and then the water was green screened in. I don't know about you. I was surprised to learn that because it looked so realistic.
Listen, Beth, it was a safety issue. If Aladdin would have fallen into real water with his heater in his pants, he would have electrocuted everyone and died. I'm sorry, you were drinking.
I almost did a full-on spit take from that. That was good.
But don't worry, all of the wine stayed inside.
Stayed in my body, stayed in my belly.
Well,
Hook is real pissed at them for something they didn't even know they did.
No, so, but then he's like, don't worry, but I have this ring. And then Jasmine looks at the ring and is just like upset because flashback time. We get Jasmine going into the royal banquet hall or royal whatever. And there's just a bunch of suitors. And they're all like, we will marry Jasmine. It will be wonderful. And then she and her dad have this conversation that's like very, let's keep the plot moving. Where it's like, Dad, I can't do this. Honey, I know you want to marry for love. But there's a war happening and Jafar is evil. And I need you to marry someone with an army. And she's like, yes, but Aladdin, a guy that I know, is perfect. And that would be great. And he's like, no, that's not going to work. And then Jafar goes, I'm here. And Jafar appears. And one guy stands up and he was like, excuse me, do you know who I am? I am a prince and you can't be doing this. And he was like, oh, that's interesting. And Jafar just makes him not anymore.
Turns him into a stick. A screaming, open mouth, agape stick. Now, Abby, I have to wonder and ask, is he conscious in there? Like, this is horrible. This is horrific. This is like Rumble season one with Geppetto's. With the puppets.
Yeah, the puppets, for sure. I also had that thought because I was like, first of all, why is he screaming? That's awful. But yes, I also believe that he has some sort of awareness because I don't think. But again, okay, so then that also took me down the road of, you know, when we turn people into things, are they still conscious? Do you remember what happened to poor Gaston?
Yeah.
He was turned into a rose and then cut in half.
Mm-hmm.
And put in water. So yeah, this was horrific. And he's like, yeah, you can totally... it's me, girl. Hey. And she's like, absolutely not. You're awful. I don't like you. So then she goes to the market.
Well, he tells her that she has until sundown to say goodbye to her
timeline.
To say goodbye to her life because she's going to have to marry him or he's going to destroy the whole kingdom.
That's right. That happened then. Sorry, I was putting that in a different spot for some reason in my brain. But
I also want to note
until sundown.
That the table that all the princes were at was the same one they used for the Knights of the Round Table. And you
obviously
can tell.
Obviously.
And it does. And the same chairs and everything. And it's like, you can see it. And it's like, they didn't even try. They didn't do anything to it. Except add like a bowl of fruit.
Beth, what they're actually saying is that everything has synchronicity to it. This is this is the same everywhere because reasons that we will not explain.
Oh, they're teasing Lion King because it's the circle of life.
Yay! So Jasmine goes down to the market.
Mm-hmm.
And she's
just
like...
Just to chat.
Because it's a thing that she does. This is how she is. She sees someone being chased for stealing something.
Mm-hmm.
And then starts shouting, it's Aladdin. It's crime. It must be
Aladdin.
It must be
Aladdin.
I saw crime happening. It must be my boyfriend. So she goes and chases. It's Ariel.
It is Ariel.
Okay. I'm going to ask a question, and this is an honest question. Would they have had forks in Agrabah? I do not know traditional flatware in that area of... I know that Agrabah is a fictional place, but I don't know what kind of utensils and flatware they would be using. And so, it says fork from IKEA seemed out of place.
So I just did a quick Google search, which has to be taken with a grain of salt because Google has been taken over by generative AI bots. But according to Wikipedia, the Wikipedia about forks, records show that by the 9th century, in some elite circles of Persia, a similar utensil known as a barjan was in limited use. By the 10th century, the table fork was in common use throughout the Middle East. So,
okay,
I think it's fine.
Maybe not I that fork specifically. That fork definitely had like IKEA vibes, but
it looked like a spork. It kind of looked like a spork to me.
God, by the way, how much would a spork blow Ariel's mind? You've seen spork, or you've seen fork, and you've seen spoon. Brace yourself for spork.
Look at this stuff. It's blowing my mind.
Exactly. And so the guy's like, how dare you? How absolutely dare you do this? And he's like, I will make you pay for this. And Jasmine shows him. She's like, excuse me. This is not how we treat our guests. She stole something. She gave it back. Chill out and get out of my tent. Here's some money.
She throws the money on the ground, so he has to pick it up.
I love how she's like, I am a princess. I must serve my people. Pick the money up off the ground. How you disgust me. So because he had reached and grabbed a hold of Ariel's necklace, ripped it off of her as payment for this very pricey fork, and she turned back into a mermaid.
And he apparently was like, lost her voice, too.
I guess.
That's what she said. That's what she said. She's
like,
said that
also
she lost
my voice. And she goes, it's a long story, and then we don't talk about it. And I don't remember Ariel's got complicated lore that I'm currently not remembering, and I apologize. But so she leaves. Jasmine gives the necklace back, and it was just like, oh my gosh, you're so cool and fun. I love all your whole vibe, girl. Like, tell me all about you. And she's like, listen, I'm in love with a human being who I think might be here. And Jasmine's like, girl, I got you. I love all the girl power and supportiveness. Because she's like, I have a magic carpet. And Ariel, ever the scholar of human things, just goes, looks like a rug. This, it's not carpet, it's a rug. And so they get on it and they just start zooming through Agrabah.
Yeah, because Jasmine's whole thing is that she says, oh, there's a prince you love. Does he have an army?
Yeah.
Yes. And my first thought was, oh, is Jasmine going to try and marry Ariel's boyfriend?
I had the same thought. I was like, oh, women supporting women. Oh, does he have an army? Jasmine, no.
I mean, I did just watch Dune 2. Not to spoil anything, but that storyline kind of comes into play a little bit. So I
couldn't
like,
even begin to understand how that would spoil Dune, but I love the idea that there's a mermaid flying carpet scenario stealing boyfriends.
Oh, that's the part that Dune 2 had. For sure. Like,
oh,
100%.
For sure. Yeah,
there
well,
are lots,
you know,
lots of mermaids in Dune on the
so
desert planet
mermaids,
of Arrakis.
Absolutely. Arrakis is absolutely teeming with
mermaids.
Teeming
with mermaids.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen sandworms. Just wait. So they find like, they find him, yeah? Like, they find
him,
an area where he should be.
It is definitely a different actor, right? That is not the same guy.
I wish it was like a meme where it was just like we just keep recasting him.
Yeah, because this was not the same Prince Eric. And he's like, oh, hey, Ariel, you're awesome. I love you. You're the best. We're going to totally be together. And also, I'm going to eat you. Like a fish.
Like a fish.
Like a fish. Girl, because it's Jafar in disguise.
And he's just like, haha, I tricked you and your mermaid person. Get
How did he know that any of this was going to happen?
Like, because he's Jafar, Abby? And he's so strong and powerful, and he knows all of the
and
things.
And he's so smart, and he's very sexy, and he was in The Mummy, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, He's just like, Jasmine, we will get married. And you're going to have to get married to me. And I'm going to take everything that's precious to you, which is all of Agrabah and the coins you throw at their feet.
Yeah, and this is where this storyline gets a little stupid at this point. Because what happens is Jafar's there and he's like, you got to marry me or I'm going to destroy Agrabah. And she says, okay, I will marry you. Here's the ring that you get as the dowry. Now, please don't destroy Agrabah. We're going to get married. And then he goes, ha ha, this was all a test and you failed. I was never going to marry you. I just needed you to give me the ring. Without the ring, I can't destroy Agrabah. So really, it's all your fault.
No, it's stupid. And then Ariel says, hey girl, I got a vial of powder it's just on me. You need to use this.
Yeah.
And Jafar says, Una reverse. And sends Ariel back packing. Mm-hmm. She's like, listen, you're a fish. You don't belong in the sand world. It's not good for you. So I'm sending you to Arrakis. And then tosses the vial into the sea. You know, where it will never be seen again.
That's right. Because, yep. you know where Ariel lives.
Yep. Nope.
Not in the sea.
Nope. Not in the sea. Arrakis. We've discussed this.
Yes, that's right.
But also, nothing else lives in the sea. Not a single thing. There's no people exploring it. There's no creatures that could pick it up. There's no, you know, like the things never get washed back up. So he's like, aha, you'll never find it. It will never come back to haunt me at all.
I just like the whole episode. Jafar is and Jasmine are teasing this whole like betrayal that Jasmine did. She failed her people. And then it turns out this is what happened, is that she made the ultimate sacrifice. And then Jafar is like, oh, this was a test and you failed. It's very dumb.
This was one of those things where, because again, Jasmine's characterization in this whole episode is just how upset she is about how much she has failed Agrabah, and it's like it's keyed up to 11, because before, like, she had kind of mentioned it, but she was still just like, gung-ho, let's go, we're gonna still find it. And then we find the ring, and then suddenly she's like, maybe I didn't wish us correctly because I don't want to face Jafar because I'm super scared of him. And it's like, okay, well, now this is a different thing. Like, we kind of did a weird, like, hard right turn on the storyline. Yeah. I'm still here for it, but it was still just like, it's a weird, I don't know if it was a just they didn't have this planned at the right time or what, but it didn't fit with the flow. I was with them, and then we just kind of got to some weirdness here. So yes, her ultimate sacrifice was doing something, or her ultimate betrayal was her sacrificing herself for the protection of the people. Wow. What a jerk.
And yeah, and then him negging her and being like, if only you'd been stronger than them. I really wish that they had rewritten this. This episode was co-written by Jan Espenson. This felt like an Espenson write, and I did not like it.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel good for the character. But alas...
And then now, also we cast a curse to get Agrabah to go away. Which is
now it's gone. Pew! Oh no, it's gone forever. I wonder where it could be. So the Nautilus ends up being like, oh no, Mayday, we're going down, we're going down. Genie Aladdin, make a wish to save all of us. And by all of us, I mean the only people on screen. Presumably the crew is fine. Nemo mentions it, that they're off screen. They're totally cool. Yeah. And then he's like, yeah, we're shipwrecked on this island. We're going to just go swimming for our boat. And you're never going to see us again. Bye. We were a means to an end. See you never.
Bye, girl.
Bye, Nemo.
I have to stay here and help you. And so he stays and plays Dr. Phil on their relationship a little bit. Mm-hmm. By mostly just existing near each of them privately. And Jasmine's
but while
like,
really being annoyed by it. He doesn't want to
so
deal
mad.
With it.
He's so mad. I feel like Hook is hundreds of years old. I do not feel that Aladdin and Jasmine are hundreds of years old.
No.
I feel like they're their exact age. And he is that equivalent of what I just assume. This is what I always laugh about with Twilight, okay? Because it's, the joke is that they keep going to high school, like the Cullens, they're mm-hmm. they look like teenagers and they keep going to high school. Imagine being in high school now, Beth. Just now, in your 30s. Now imagine doing that constantly well into your hundreds of years age. Wouldn't you just want to scream constantly? Like,
you're like, yeah, I'm an adult. You don't get to tell me shit.
I have so much experience in my brain of the things that are going through. You are learning these things, which is not bad, but it's just one of those things where you're like, if I'm surrounded by this all the time, my brain, it will just rot my brain. And I feel like that's what he's like. I have to, you guys don't understand. I have to get back to my fiance who believes that I have betrayed her. It is of utmost importance that I do these things. And you guys are having a Rachel Ross will they, won't they moment. I don't have time for you two to not have communication. This is my least favorite trope in the books, because I feel like Hook would absolutely have favorite tropes in books that he reads.
He would.
And he's just like, ah. And Jasmine was like, no, I couldn't possibly. He's too good for me. Because he's like, oh, is you not, do you think that he's beneath you? And she's like, no, I am beneath him. He is good. I am the bad. And then he talks to Aladdin, and Aladdin's just like, I don't understand. I just want to kiss her and touch her face all sexy-like again. She's getting weird about it. He's like, oh, my God. Just talk to each other. Please. I have to go.
Wait, what do you think Hook's favorite trope would be?
Oh, Hook is 100% an enemies to lovers kind of guy.
Oh, that's a good one. See, I was also thinking like two ships passing in the night, like one perfect night.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And just that, like,
just the fleeting connection and then going your separate ways and maybe seeing each other again in like several years and then just being like, it's like we were never apart. But also enemies to lovers, because that's literally what he did.
And also, probably a real big fan of just the book Moby Dick. And has a very Ron Swanson feeling about it, where he's like, there's nothing about Moby Dick that's any deeper than a man who hates a fish. Like, his whole thing is, wow, this is just a guy on a boat who's trying to never-endly tackle a monster, and like he will not stop until he gets it. Like, that's Hook's whole thing.
That's oh my god, do you think that when he met Captain Nemo for the first time, he like fangirled out?
Oh my god. I am a pirate. I didn't think you could go under the water. That's crazy.
It's you're not so you may questions. Not be Captain you may not be Captain Ahab, but you're pretty close. You're Captain Nemo. I love it. Oh my god.
I have so many questions.
Can you sign my Hook?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I don't, I've always wanted to meet you, and I actually don't even know what to say. Like, I just imagine him doing that thing where, like, I don't know. I've very rarely met a celebrity, but the times that I have, it's the moment of just be like, I don't know what the hell I'm supposed to say to this person. Because you don't want to be weird, but you're also just like, you mean more to me in a different kind of way, and I am no one to you. And it's just such a strange dynamic that I feel like I'm too touched in on. And so, like, this is like 10 or so years ago, but I met Will Wheaton. Like, it was just like, he was at a board game convention, and I'm like, I want to go meet Will Wheaton. So I stood in line, and then I got like two people from him, and I just went, the hell am I supposed to say? Hey, what's up? Loved you in Star Trek, man. Like, thanks. Like, I can't make small talk with the man. Hey, what's going on? Like, that's just one of those things. And then it was just like, and then I got too nervous to go talk to Felicia Day, which I regret to this day. Because I was like, what the hell am I supposed to say to her? If I can't talk to him, no way I'm going to be able to talk to her. So, but that's a personal thing. But yes, I agree. He definitely fangirled out and probably was just like, dear diary, today I met the man, the myth, the legend.
And now the land, the myth, the legend has departed along with Liam, Hook's half bro. So they're gone forever. Bye-bye. So long.
Bye.
And they're on an island and they're going to find Jafar because they've got the compass that goes to revenge. And apparently the Nautilus compass that finds someone with revenge in their heart can be pinpointed to a specific person if you dream hard enough, because I'm guessing that's what it is, because there's literally no other explanation. They're just like, Jafar, find Jafar. He wants revenge, we assume.
I love the idea that you can weaponize it that much. Mm-hmm. Just be like, I need the exact coordinates for Jafar. Like, I feel like they're talking to like an Alexa or a Siri and just being like, Jafar.
But like,
find him.
Why would Jafar have revenge in his heart? He's accomplished what he wanted to do. Like, maybe he's just chilling. Maybe he's just having a good time. He's retired. He's like, my goal was to destroy Agrabah. I did that. Yay me. I'm gonna go to a tiki bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's not what happens. Instead, we get a subtle nod to the direct-to-video sequel, The Return of Jafar.
Oh, gosh.
A movie I could recite from memory. I saw that movie so much, my VHS broke.
Oh, my goodness.
Figuratively, not literally.
Oh, no. I was a film snob to the nth degree, even as a child. Mm. So whenever it was like, Pocahontas 2, Cinderella 2, you know, whatever. I was like, no. Not canon. Nope.
Apparently Cinderella 3 is legit good. I haven't seen it, but I've heard like that one is actually like out of all of them, Cinderella 3 is the best one because it's really bonkers.
Hey, random piece of lore about me. The only one of those sequels I've ever watched is Pocahontas 2. And it was two or so nights before my wedding. And I watched it with your husband. I don't know why, but we had been drinking very heavily, and the only plot point about that movie that I remember is that there's bear baiting, which we then looked up and apparently was a very fun sport for the Brits at a certain point in their lives. Gross. I learned about that from Pocahontas 2. What was that movie? Oh my
Pocahontas
God.
2 had Christian Bale as John Rolfe. That's bonkers to me. Christian Bale was in a direct-to-video Disney
Christian
movie.
Bale was John Rolfe in the first one, right?
John Rolfe wasn't in the first movie. It was only John Smith, played by Mel Gibson.
No, Pocahontas cast. Hold on. Christian Bale? Did you say Christian Bale?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's
Is it not
Thomas.
Christian Bale? Oh, he he's was Thomas. Thomas. Wait, who played John Rolfe in the second one?
Hold on. Pocahontas 2 cast. They're rarely looked up. John Rolfe. Billy Zane.
Billy Zane?
No way you confuse those two. No way you confuse those two.
That was post Titanic, so it does not surprise me. Billy Zane was at the top of his game at the time.
I don't recognize any of the other actors except for Billy Zane.
So they come across the I'm gonna go back I'm gonna get us back on track here. So we get into a cottage. Look at this stuff. Isn't it neat? There's so many corkscrews and so many forks, including a fork bomb.
Fork bomb! You know, as you do.
And Ariel's there, living on an island with Eric. I was kind of hoping she'd have a kid, like she'd have a baby or be pregnant or something. I was kind of hoping for like just a little bit to indicate like their forward momentum, because it's more just like, I'm here, Eric will be back later.
We actually couldn't find the actor again, so he's not here. I agree with you. I have a feeling they went, what would this kid be? And then they got so stumped about what a mermaid and a human child would be, and then they were like, we can't delve into this. Not today.
Excuse me, all they would have to do is watch The Little Mermaid 2. Where Ariel's daughter is a human who longs to become a mermaid and live in the sea. We're back to the Disney direct-to-video sequels.
Could you imagine the forward momentum so much so that they have like a 13-year-old daughter who is just like screaming, Mom, I want to be in the ocean. Why do you keep me here? This place is a prison. And just constant, just no, honey, you must be like just having that full like, I don't know. I think you could have probably done it in about 30 seconds to just be like, yeah, we watched Little Mermaid 2. Enjoy this. So, but they're like, hey, Ariel, we're kind of stumped here. What do we do? And she's like, amazing. I have so much stuff that's going to help you because I'm basically the Sanford and Sons of this island. Look at all the stuff that I have. Look at this stuff. Isn't it neat? I have Jafar in a lamp. Here he is.
So apparently this is a nod to when Jafar was imprisoned in Once Upon a Time in Wonderland.
Yes.
I can't remember if the props are the same or if his outfit's the same. I legit can't remember.
It's not even the same guy.
No, it's not the same guy, but we're going to move on from there. I just found it really baffling that he emerges from this vase lamp and immediately is just like, oh, I free myself. Boop. Psych. Like, how? They don't even explain how he does it. He just gets out of the lamp and he's like, oh, these cuffs? Boom. Goodbye, cuffs. I'm free now. I free myself.
Which absolutely asks the question, you know, if you're trapped in a lamp long enough, can you accidentally free yourself? And the answer is yes.
Apparently.
Apparently... You know what? To be fair, maybe that's what happened to the other genie. They made the big deal, and I know what we talked about, what it actually was. We can imagine, like, oh, he's free now. Yeah, he found a loophole, and he just left. He was just like, someone rubbed like, can I have a wish? And he's like, nope, see you later. Whee! So he, like, shows up, and he was like, I am here. You can never, like, stop me. I am unstoppable, and I'm a genie with unlimited cosmic power and no longer an itty-bitty living space. Look at me. So wonderful, so strong, and I only have one goal, and it is vengeance upon the show I was previously in. And I don't even want Agrabah anymore. And JK, it's in this ring. I put it inside here. It's all very Men in Black. You wouldn't understand. and then Ariel's just like, hey man, I got the dust back. We've got the dust. I found it. Oh, poof. And now you're a screaming stick.
Yes. And it's like weird because Jasmine does like a fake out with some fake dust, but then has the real dust and then turns him into a screaming statue. And then Ariel just carries it around for the rest of the episode.
I am obsessed with her just like, because it's just like in her crook of her arm.
She's
like
just walking around with it. With a dead man.
Absolutely cursed thing, and she's just like, just doesn't even care.
Nope.
Ariel definitely has the vibes of someone who collects haunted baby dolls. Like, definitely has a bunch of real creepy dolls.
I feel like she also like collected skulls. Like, she just found bones.
Oh,
and was like,
for
look
sure.
at this stuff. Isn't it neat? It's a femur. It's a hip bone. It's a spinal column.
Like, I imagine that Ariel's got kind of that, like, ADHD hyperfixation thing where she, like, has different collections based on what she can find. And for, like, a full summer was just trying to find a full human skeleton. And so, like, she's like, oh my gosh, this one's a femur. If I find another one, I've completed my skeleton.
It's a much darker version of having the statue of Prince Eric in her grotto. She just puts together bones so that she can recreate her own Prince Eric out of bones.
It's the bait and switch you do when you get into a relationship with somebody. You're like, oh my gosh, I got into a relationship with this wonderful person. They're so love struck and look how great it is. And then like flash forward several years into the relationship, you let them know who you really are. And now you've got bones in the closet. You're just like, listen, I'm not going to build a statue about you. Like we're married. We live together. I don't need to do these things anymore. I really got into these really cool headstones though. It's like, what? What are you talking about? I love that Eric would probably be super supportive too. Eric would be like, yes, honey. Also, when I was walking, I found this. I think it might be a finger bone. So I know those are really rare.
Wouldn't you think my collection's complete?
Could you imagine? Honey, I'm back from work. You'll never believe all the stuff I found in the street for you. Yay!
True love. So yeah, so after Jafar has been defeated quite easily, quite handily by Jasmine, she's like, okay, now I can make yowdies. Because the real magic is in me. And by which I mean my mouth.
And yeah, because we haven't kissed before, because if we kissed, it'd be true love's kiss. And we're gonna true love's kiss, and there's gonna be the rainbow pulse, and Agrabah will just now appear in this island.
Did Agrabah appear, or did it just get transported back to its OG location and then just took them all with it? I don't know, and I'm so confused.
I love the idea that Ariel's chilling in her little, like, tiki thing, and then Agrabah appears. And now all the citizens of Agrabah are like, well, I guess it is still sandy, but it's so much more humid than where we're from. Like, I guess we've been in a ring for a while. I can't imagine the weather was fine there.
Also, the kiss freed Aladdin from his curse, which they didn't need to do because he had a wish left.
She kissed him so good.
So good.
He lost his job. Girl, what are you doing? You kissed a man, now he doesn't have a job. What are you doing? So they're like, yay, we're in love. It's amazing. And Hook's like, Hook is the big softy he is. It's just like, wow, that's great. Sure wish I was able to get my kisses in, but sadly, no. And then cut to Ariel holding her haunted, cursed Jafar head. And she's like, oh my God, I have a shell phone in the back. It's a Nokia. That thing will never die. Do you need to, like, make a call? And Hook's like, it will only work if someone is near it to hear it. But we can try.
And who's near it? Of course, it's Emma, because Henry was a stupid ass teenager and forgot to take out the trash. So she's like, oh, she comes home drunk, walking kind home, kind of drunk. But she's just a little too tipsy to drive a police car, which I guess.
Good for her. Good for her. I'm not going to. But I just doodle where she's like, I'm going to have to go pick up my car tomorrow. Oh, my gosh. She doesn't seem drunk at all. I say this only because I saw her mother drunk, and her mother was a different kind of drunk.
Her mother was ladies who tavern high fives.
Where was Regina in all this? Drunk. What kind of drunk was Regina?
Yeah, I mean, Regina could probably. Maybe Regina drove her home. Regina was definitely pacing herself with her Apple teenies. Like, she nursed it. She was the responsible one.
Regina definitely has the vibe of someone who would get absolutely shit-faced, but never, it would never show up. Like, you'd be like, ma'am, how are you walking around with a blood alcohol level of this? And she's still able to perfectly do everything. She's like, oh, I will perform all of these things. Yeah, she's doing this. She's doing mayoral paperwork. She's remembering to do chores. She's cleaning up. She, like, did a load of laundry and remade her bed. Like, but she's so drunk. Like, it, like, one more drink might have killed her.
Like, so Emma takes the trunk filled with all of Hook's sad things, takes it outside, and then she starts hearing the shell phone because Hook has one in his bag, and then he has one on his person. And he calls, and he's like, Emma, I don't know if you can hear me. But Gideon tricked me. He sent me away. I'm coming back to you, baby girl. I'll be there soon. And she just goes, Hook, my man. I'll wait for you on the widow walk.
This has been such a confusing 24 hours. I feel like Leroy Pop probably lied to me. Okay, so here's my question. Maybe because I'm just forgetting it, how it works. Are those shell phones only connected to each other, or are they connected to other shells?
I think they're probably just open bandwidth. They're open source. Could you imagine,
like, you went on a vacation to, like, Cocoa Beach, and you found a cool conch shell, and you took it home, and you're just sitting at home. It's sitting on your fireplace, like, up on the mantle, and then, like, one night, you're just sitting there chilling, reading a book, and you just hear from the conch shell, Emma! Emma, Gideon is coming for you. You're like, what is going on? Hook? Oh my God. The amount of drama, like, coming out of the shell.
Picture this. So two parents asleep in bed. The child comes into the room and is like, Mommy, can you listen to the shell? And she's like, I've heard it. Yes, it sounds like the ocean. It's beautiful. No, it's different this time. Listen. She's like, fine, if you'll go back to bed. Emma! What?
This little kid just appears. I love it. Just got my, honey, what's going on? Did you throw up? No. Hook is concerned about Emma because Gideon has returned and Emma thought that Hook wasn't coming back. What are you talking about? It all came out of this shell. Okay. We're going to put you back to bed and this shell is going in the attic. You keep coming to us with these strange stories and I don't think you need to be near this thing anymore. I just love that it would be like a random family in Nebraska. Yeah.
Total landlocked. So yeah, and then after she gets the message, she's filled with hope. Up pops Aesop to just kind of goad her a little bit. And then she's just like, oh, I get your vibe. You are not Aesop at all. Oh, no, it's Gideon. He created a whole bar out of thin air just so he could get a savior's tears, I guess. Like, this, did he just magic? We just need to ignore this because all of the logistics involved, getting from point A to point B, I'm just going to pretend Aesop is a real guy and Gideon just made him take a nice long sleep and just took over his bar for a night.
I like that. Second, another different theory that Gideon's magic is actually the power of manifestation. That all of the things that he keeps coming up with, he just brings into real life on accident. He's just like, no, this will, all of this stuff will work because I thought of it.
Mm.
Like, he's got the he's got the ego of, like, the ultimate ego of a guy. Like, I bet you if you ask Gideon, he would 100% tell you he could land a plane if he needed to.
Oh my God, he's like the perfect embodiment of the worst traits of Rumpel and Bell.
Exactly. I read it in a book once. I know everything about it.
And I can do it, God. And I will do it, and you cannot stop me forever. So the latest trend, so the latest reveal we get in this episode is we have a billion different ways to create portals. There's also a way we can block a portal. And we can block a portal with two tiny tears on a napkin. And Gideon's like, I will hold this napkin and I'm going to prevent your boyfriend from ever coming back because this is an ability that I have for some reason. You have to help me kill the Black Fairy. If you do that, then Hook can come back. But other than that, nope, ain't going to happen. Dun, dun, dun. That's the end of the episode.
I like that Gideon also does like a creepy magic where he's like standing in front of Emma and then just like poofs behind her just to like super creep her out. But yeah, this is a confusing piece of magic. Mm-hmm. I would never let anyone near me again. Allergy season would be a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to move somewhere where you don't have really allergies. It's pretty dry. Yeah. Again, fun episode. Very silly. Very silly.
Extremely silly. I overall liked it in spite of the stupidity that was a huge part of it, because it had just those fun once upon a time background world building elements that I really like that we don't get as much anymore. I also felt like, as silly as Ariel's whole deal was, it was better handled than the thing with Tinkerbell. Because they're in the sixth season. They're calling back to previous episodes, previous seasons. They're doing the guest appearances left and right. They're pulling out that money. I feel like this one was better than Tink's.
Yeah, I do think that, like, they either knew what the plan was for the next season, or they just thought that they were done here, because this is the part where I think it has started where it's just like the final curtain call. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, you remember this guy? Remember this guy? Remember these people? Like, we're ushering people out and then just like sprinkling in the last couple of things in the most bizarre locations. Because, yep. But to be fair though, this one did have everything you wanted from like a one sentence about Once Upon a Time. What was this episode about? Oh, so Captain Nemo and Captain Hook are with Jasmine and Aladdin, and they're trying to get back to a small town in New England. But don't worry, they get help from Ariel.
Yeah. I will tell you, Tim, my husband, was asking me about the episode. Because, you know, when I watch it and we're about to tape, he asks me how it was, and I just started doing that synopsis for him, and then he just like paused me for a second and was like, yeah, every once in a while I'm just reminded of how batshit crazy the show is. And I'm like, yep, that's Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, so that was yay fun.
Yay, so fun. Well, we want to thank you, everybody, for joining us for this latest fun episode of Once Upon a Time and Once Upon a Timing. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get those podcasts. You can join our Facebook group. That's at facebook.com/group/OUA timing. And you can support us on Patreon. We want to thank our patrons for your continued love and support. This week's Patreon shout out goes to Samantha Hossel. Thank you so much, Samantha. If you want to become one of the patrons, just go to patreon.com/OUA timing. And as a side note, if anybody lives in the Charlotte, North Carolina area, in May, it's early May, I don't remember the exact dates, I will be in a performance of Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella. So if you happen to be in the area, you want to come see a show? I will give you guys information in the coming weeks on that. And thank you so much for joining us. And Abby, we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.